If we understand that slavery created the roots of our modern society in many different ways, many negative, but some positive in the movements against slavery, then you can't stand by and argue, well, my ancestors weren't slaveholders, or my ancestors weren't enslaved, and so this isn't my problem. It is all of our problems, because we are living in the world that that system built, all of us.
All of us living in a world inescapably affected by slavery, a key concept every generation should grasp to help overcome the challenging legacy of the transatlantic slave trade. I'm Omar Musni, and welcome to another edition of our UN and Africa podcast. You just heard Christiane Crouch, Associate Professor of History and Director of American Studies at Bard College, who came to UN headquarters to participate in an event that connected students from all over the world, as well as academia and government officials, to discuss the history of slavery and its effects on us all today. Every year, the International Day of Remembrance of the Victims of Slavery and the Transatlantic Slave Trade commemorates the more than 15 million men, women, and children who suffered during that tragic 400-year chapter in human history. But the annual student conference, organized as one of the UN Remember Slavery Program's year-round educational events, sought not only to raise awareness of the profound tragedy, but also to recognize and celebrate the contributions made by people of African descent and members of the African diaspora. Matt Wells sat down to speak with Professor Crouch, as well as Ambassador Missouri Sherman Peter, the Permanent Observer for the Caribbean Community, or CARICOM, who explained the importance of having an international day dedicated to the transatlantic slave trade.
Well, you know, they've always told me, since I was a child in school, they say knowledge is power, and that you can't begin to resolve problems or recognize and be proud of what you are unless you have the knowledge. When you bring students in to thinking that way, the problems that we have, the differences that we have, become less when people understand what is happening. UN is the premier multilateral organization. Where else to bring these matters? Where else to bring our children and let them see that this organization, through the Remember Slavery Program, through the decade, through the wonderful Ark of Return, is actually looking at slavery, remembering it, celebrating the accomplishments of Afro-Americans and their diaspora, and African Caribbeans and their diaspora, and not looking at, oh my goodness, this is really bad. What happened was horrific, but we're moving from here, and we can only move from here with the young people who were in that room today. They're the ones who are going to lead us out of that. And the knowledge and the sharing and the environment in the General Assembly Hall, I think, was very, very special today.
So, Christiane, why did you want to come to the UN in particular today? And as an educator, do you feel that this vital history is in danger of being diluted, of being almost forgotten, if we're not careful?
The question becomes, which communities are going to do that dilution? The reason that we have the kinds of engagement with the legacy of transatlantic slavery, with the legacy of slavery in the Americas, with a global diaspora of people of African descent, is because those communities have kept those memories alive. They have kept those stories alive. Many of those individuals were excluded from archives, were literally erased at the same time that they were being exploited. And so the pushback is from those communities.
So the history was never even recorded in many cases, in terms of individual stories?
Not recorded in terms of individual stories. Right? It was turning people into statistics. And the numbers are shocking and staggering and horrifying, but the efface, the lived experience of these men, women, and children, and it is their descendants who survived and kept those narratives alive and kept whatever material fragments that they could that have forced society to reckon in many places with not just the legacy of slavery, but its continuing impact and effects today. And so my reason for coming here today was to ensure that these young people, as Ambassador Sherman Peters has pointed out, are able to carry that message forward. These kids will be able to take what they've learned here today and their interface with their peers in other countries and pay that forward. And so that's an important step.
Just say a little bit more, Ambassador, about how you felt the young people responded to what they heard today. I mean, do you think that there's a danger that we can sort of patronize young people when it comes to very serious, profound issues like this? Were you impressed by the level of attention and understanding?
I liked the word leadership that was bandied at the meeting. I like the fact that they do their own research, that they present their own research, that they ask questions of their peers, that in turn they respond to questions of their peers. And their enthusiasm was actually infectious. I think when they leave from here, remember slavery really will be here. The consequences of slavery and the transatlantic slave trade is basically where you find a lot of focus. With these young people and what's happening today, we're moving the focus off the horrific and horrible things which did happen and which must be, as the professor says, must be historically clear to people. But it also gives them an opportunity to say, yes, but among us are Nobel Prize leaders, among us are secretaries, generals of the United Nations, first ladies of the United States of America. And when all of these things are put together in one frame, it makes the young people not be lectured to or taught to, but it makes them anxious to do more and more and more research. Only with this knowledge and this understanding that you're going to see things like racism take a step back, xenophobia take a step back, and we need these things to step back and one day be gone.
What struck you most profoundly this morning, Christiane, in terms of how you felt the messages were received and how young people engaged?
What really struck me was there was a moment where one of the facilitators asked, what are some of the contributions that people of African descent have made in the United States? And a student from the back shouted, they built the White House. And I think it was so striking that the easy answer is Barack Obama was elected or Michelle Obama became First Lady. And those are achievements. But the idea that they reached for something that's not typically talked about in the media to say they built these institutions, they built this architecture, they built this environment, really palpably showed me how the students are thinking about this space. The presentation from Mexico did the same type of work, thinking about the ways in which human trafficking in cartels are replicating these issues, that they recognize Afro-Mexican is now a category that's going to come into being in reality. The Tanzanian students being incredibly aware of the ways in which Nelson Mandela articulated and expanded on things like the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. They don't necessarily talk about this with all of the citations and references that experts would bring to it, but the passion is there and the depth of understanding is there. And these are young kids.
Ambassador, was there one particular thing that got under your skin in a good way?
In a good way, yes, but I have to balance it. I was called upon by the Bahamas government to set up the regime for trafficking in persons. And what impressed me was that they were not only looking, in Mexico in particular, at slavery and the legacy of slavery, which is important, but when we say never again, they're associating it with something that's happening on the ground right now. In other words, they're looking at what happened, they're looking at what's happening, and they're saying, remember the legacy, don't let this happen again. And I thought that sort of putting the two things together, for me, was very impressive. It was not just, you know, racism and all of this has come out of that, but it's that if you don't act now, you stand to have another horrific period in the history of it. It's already a $1 billion industry is trafficking in persons. But I think putting the two together to say, we let this happen, we're not going to let this happen anymore, but we also don't want this to happen, I thought was very perceptive for young people.
I'll ask you both, I mean, what are your concerns about the historical lessons that perhaps are not being absorbed properly? And to what extent does the non-African diaspora, do the other communities that make up countries like the United States, like the Caribbean countries, what kind of warning signs do you see in terms of what's lacking a full appreciation and an understanding of the slave trade and what it means for today?
I think people fundamentally do not understand how the global economy rests on the experience of the slave trade, not just the expropriation of labor or the theft of bodies. The production of capital, the production of networks, the insurance industry comes out of the slave trade. And to assume that
in what way? Can you just explain that?
So the insurance of maritime property, and particularly the loss of human lives on slave ships didn't just go from Africa to the Americas in a 3-week period. They oftentimes spent a long time along the coast, months, years, and then crossed the Atlantic and then would traffic a number of ports in Brazil, around the Caribbean, and then ultimately end up in North America if there was any human cargo left. ensuring that cargo was a way of merchants safeguarding their security of having to minimally feed these individuals and get them to their point of destination. And that's how you end up with crimes like the wholesale massacre of an entire population of an enslaved ship because they were worth more dead than they were alive.
So complete dehumanization.
Complete dehumanization. But I think that there's a way that if we understand that slavery created the roots of our modern society in many different ways, many negative, but some positive in the movements against slavery, then you can't stand by and argue, well, my ancestors weren't slaveholders or my ancestors weren't enslaved, so this isn't a problem that touches me.
Which is the kind of classic white sort of brush off in a sense.
Exactly. To put it bluntly. Exactly. That I didn't have anything to do with this and I don't engage in, you know, white supremacy or racism, and so this isn't my problem. It is all of our problems because we are living in the world that that system built, all of us. And until that is acknowledged and taught and spoken about by the media and embraced by politicians, we're not going to get anywhere. And this is still going to be an issue of contention.
Ambassador?
I'm from an interesting region in the world where today one of the legacies of slavery is demographic. At the end of the slave trade, Europeans retreated to Europe. At independence, you had another retreat. And so our societies are primarily, with the exception of Suriname, I think it is, and Guyana and Belize, which has Native American populations as well, and more of a population mix than the rest. The demographics is that we're actually in the majority. And our position, which is beginning to be a global position, is focused on the question of reparations. Because as the professor says, the consequences, the legacy of slavery, you will find it everywhere, in justice and development, in racism, in xenophobia, in education, in health. You find it pretty much everywhere. And so we are looking at how do you recompense us for that? If you are going to recompense people for owning our bodies because our bodies were no longer there at the end of slavery, then why not recompense us who built involuntarily societies and the great cities all around the world and provided mainstays, gold, this, that, the other? Why not recompense us? Why not? And so, of course, the CARICOM heads of government, this is something that they brought to the world, and they said, we are going to seek reparations. We don't mean shell out monies to us, but we mean cooperate with us.
Or things like debt forgiveness, perhaps?
Debt forgiveness, of course, is high on the list. And technological exchanges, educational exchanges, in other words, make it possible for our development to be enhanced. So it will be on par with what we did involuntarily. And now come back to us and recompense us. And an apology would be nice too.
Obviously, race relations are especially fraught, it seems, in the USA right now. I mean, do you feel that there are ways in which the UN can help advance the principles and the spirit that's behind this International Day of Remembrance of Victims in terms of applying these historical lessons and make sure that they are being heard in the corridors of power in Washington and elsewhere?
For sure. American history is rich and diverse, but it is also embedded in a narrative of exceptionalism. Americans don't realize that North America received the smallest proportion of the transatlantic slave trade, around 400,000 individuals, who by 1865 numbered 4 million. I think that there are ways in which embedding this story in this broader narrative will help people to understand that the U.S., when it goes out and wants to advocate for democracy or wants to advocate for change, that there is a legacy it has to engage in its own history that will help it to better connect to other places, better connect to neighbors in the Caribbean, better connect to neighbors in Central America, better connect to neighbors in Africa. And the UN's work is critical in this way because it removes the conversation from being one of defensiveness, of blaming someone. You are the only ones responsible for slavery, which is, I think, one of the big stumbling blocks in the United States, and turns it into a conversation about inequality and justice. Equity is the most important thing to achieve here. And the UN is a space where that can be advocated for, and where you have sovereign nations that have successfully overturned this, Haiti or Ghana or Nigeria, or that were never colonized like Ethiopia, to be able to make these points and say, treat us as equals.
What do you think, Ambassador?
I listened to your point about the American situation and so on. But again, I have to put it on another foot. We have development problems in our region. We have a skewed way of economics in particular, education, justice, equality, everything. And for our part, we have told the stories where we are now is, and I was so happy you touched on debt forgiveness, because that's definitely with two ticks. We are now trying to bring our own societies together to make sure that we get the never again. But we have told the stories. We have proud stories. I mean, Queen Nanny of the Maroons, you know.
A great leader,
you know, and even coming out of the Caribbean, Marcus Garvey. We have coming out of the Caribbean from one country, two Nobel Prize winners, you know, Derek Walcott and Sir Arthur Lewis. And so ours now is to bring our countries to the point where we are developing, we're growing, and we're moving. You know, we're vulnerable. We have hurricanes and all that. But if we do our development right, our resilience right, we're saying to them, come along with us and help us to do this, because we built some of the biggest economies in Europe.
Now, this morning you heard by video link from Tanzania. Do relations between the diaspora and African countries themselves, do they need to change? Do they need to grow closer? Are there ways in which this precious history and the lessons from it and the distortions it's caused that last through to the present day can be improved by closer relationships between African countries and the countries of the Americas?
I believe that we work well in the Caribbean with Africans and with the African group, and we know our history and they know theirs. And we do work together on many, many issues, and we'll continue to do so as we move through our reckoning with history and bringing ourselves back to where we can never come back to where we were. We're here now. We're part of the diaspora, but there are relations between the African diaspora and the African continent, of course. Yes.
I think beyond the level of policy that the ambassador is talking about, and she's absolutely right, at a more informal level, immigration is already doing this work for us. The fastest.
Look at New York City.
Oh, exactly. Look at New York City. But for the last 10 years, the fastest growing African-American population in the United States has been African immigrants. And this is true for Europe as well. So when you think about these relationships, Oromos, Tigres, Nigerians, Igbos, Ghanaians, all of these communities who are migrating to these places, oftentimes voluntarily, but sometimes also because they're fleeing the conditions that, again, have been generated by these legacies of slavery and colonialism.
You think of Somalia, you think of South Sudan.
Yeah. Absolutely, right? There is an asylum crisis taking place. And again, this is why recognizing that history is important. But those communities maintain their relationships with kin at home. And they maintain relationships with the first generations who came to these places. And so there's a way in which policy is naturally going to follow what people are doing. Right? It's the human movement. If the populations, the individuals demand it, policy will have to follow.
Any other observations about the African relationship?
Well, in the country in which I was born, the African presence is being felt in, for example, our churches. We, you know, the Catholic Church is, you know, the fastest growing religious sect, I think, is in Africa. And so we have Africans there. We have Africans that have taught in the Bahamas. We have African medical doctors that are in the Bahamas. We have them in our medical schools and so on. So as Professor says, they're coming. And in a lot of instances, we're inviting them to add to the richness. And of course, the diaspora is everywhere. So the connections have always been there in education and exchange of persons and so on. And I believe that it will continue to grow.
Christiana, are there things that the UN needs to be doing more of in order to make these vital lessons from history work and to change some of this structural inequality that you've been discussing?
The UN has an extraordinary platform to reach people around the world. It's about making information available. It's about allowing people to speak, whether it's school children in these archived video conferences, or making information available on the website, but to make it a place where these histories are no longer obscured. The UN has an unbelievable reach in countries everywhere. So this becomes a hub where those stories can never be lost again. Mm-hmm. The idea that the Ark of Remembrance is on UN Plaza, that's an incredibly important step because it might not be seen by people who aren't in New York City, but the very act of placing it there gives a weight and importance to this history, that this isn't just about a decade of commemoration. This is about a permanence in the human experience moving forward. So I hope that the UN remains committed to this.
For my part, I think that the UN has come a long way. I mean, we've had an international year against racism. We're now in the decade for people of African descent, recognition, and development justice. And the Ark of Return, I think, is one of the most incredible things. I've brought young people here, and I've brought old people here. And the thing about it is that when you walk through the entrance and you see this monument in front of you, the first thing they say is, "What's that?" And that's the beginning.
Thank you.
the beginning of a dialogue on the consequences and lessons of the transatlantic slave trade. That was Ambassador Missouri Sherman Peter of CARICOM, along with Professor Christiane Crouch of Bard College. And that concludes this edition of UN and Africa. Remember, you can find more audio programs from UN News by visiting news.un.org and clicking on Audio Hub. I'm Omar Musni, and thank you for listening.